This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, September 3rd, 2014. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poetry as play. This time of year, everybody's headed back to school, if they're not there already, including the teachers of poetry. For better or for worse, most people first read and write poetry in the classroom, and their attitude toward poetry is inevitably influenced by their poetry teachers. Matthew Burgess is one of them. He's a poet who teaches both college students and elementary school kids. He's written about it in a piece up in the Learning Lab on our website, poetryfoundation.org. He lives in Brooklyn, where he joins me now. Matthew, you teach creative writing and composition at Brooklyn College, and you also work with little kids in the New York City public schools. You say people often ask you, what is that like? What is that like?
Well, it's a pleasure. And over the years, one of the things I found is that I would go from the first grade classroom at PS 111 in Manhattan, and then I would literally the next day go to Brooklyn College and be working with college age poets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the...
Who's a better poet?
The first graders.
Okay. We get that out of the way, right?
That doesn't... that's not completely true, but they do have something.
Okay. What's the experience like of teaching first graders as opposed to college students? It must require very different approaches.
Well, one way to answer that question is to talk about what happens when you walk in the room.
Mm.
And with the first graders, they are game from the get-go. So you walk in and they're curious, who is this person?
And who is this poet guy?
Yeah, who is this guy? Who's Mr. Matthew? And I immediately sort of announce it and we do this sort of chanting. So I'll walk in and I'll say, repeat after me. I'm a poet. And they immediately start saying, I'm a poet. And I say, and I know it. And I know it. I've got my whole life. I got my whole life to show it. And then we start snapping. So right away, we're in that happy, ready-to-go, kind of exuberant place.
And that doesn't go over well in college.
No, you can't. You have to stop doing that around fourth grade.
Okay.
I've tried it. And I've gone into fourth or fifth grade, and they shoot you the stink eye. Yeah, it's pretty
okay.
Harsh.
All right. So what do you do when you go in a college room? What's the difference?
Well, when you go into a college room, students... on one hand, they want to be there. If you're teaching poetry writing, then they've signed up. But they're also defensive. Not all, and I don't want to speak in generalizations, but they are a little bit wary, and they're wondering where this is going to go, and they're afraid.
Tell me about the fear. What are they afraid of?
So it's fear of failure, it's fear of criticism, it's the competitive edge that sort of sets in at some point.
When the kids don't feel that in the same way, they have no fear.
First, second, third grade, very little fear. They don't care. The analogy that I use is that there's a certain age at which students worry that their drawing needs to look like something.
Yeah, yeah. When they start to be more realistic, or they think the tree has to look like a real tree.
Exactly,
The
same holds for poetry, that the young students aren't worried about the outcome. And the college students are already, in anticipation of writing a poem, concerned about controlling how that is going to end up.
Right.
It's going to be like...
Not the process.
Exactly.
The kids are having fun writing.
Exactly.
Let's talk about Kenneth Koch for a moment. He's the great innovator in teaching poetry to children, I think. And he taught kids in the East Village in the 1960s, and he wrote the books Rose, Where Did You Get That Red? Teaching Great Poetry to Children, and Wishes, Lies, and Dreams, Teaching Children to Write Poetry. Can you tell us about Koch's influence on you and how you approach kids in the classroom?
Yeah, actually, in Wishes, Lies, and Dreams, he uses that painting analogy.
Okay.
And he says that he noticed that with his kids, they had already broken through in terms of teaching art in public schools. So with visual art, they had figured out these ways to unleash young kids, but that same thing hadn't happened with poetry. So he set out to solve that, to figure out how could I address the way that poetry is taught in the school as being very rule-based and difficult, especially rhyme and meter as being essential.
Right.
And how can I find ways, find techniques, find approaches to teach poetry that will do the same thing?
Well, one of the things he did, I know, is that he taught John Ashbery poems in classrooms to little kids, which John Ashbery at the time was not the super world-famous avant-garde poet that everybody knew. He was a friend of Kenneth Koch's at the time, and this is in the 1960s. And when I asked you to choose a poem from the Poetry Foundation's online archive that you've used in the classroom, you came up with somebody who equally surprised me, and that was Robert Duncan, who's not known for his accessible poems. So why did you choose Robert Duncan, in particular the poem Childhood's Retreat? Why that poem?
I came across that poem because of the dissertation that I was writing. Oh. It's called The Vastness of Small Spaces, Self-Portraits of the Artist as a Child Enclosed. Really, what was on my mind at the time was secret hideouts, the small space that really all children kind of find in whatever environment they're in. If you ask people, they can recount a small space that they either made or imagined. Mm-hmm. So when I found the Robert Duncan poem, I thought, I want to try this. And I had my reservations because it's very lyrical and some of the language would fly over the head of a third grader.
So what did you say to the third grade class to introduce this poem to them? What did you say? Or did you just read it, or did you just did you preface it with something?
The art of it, I think, is how you preface it and then the segue. So I start with a question. Do any of you guys have a secret spot? Do you have a place where you go to be quiet or to be by yourself? Hands go up. So I like to sort of get some of their experience in the room. Mm-hmm. And then before that conversation goes on and on and on, I segue to the poem. And for this poem, the beauty of the audio,
Childhood's Retreat.
It really creates a mood. It creates an atmosphere in the room. So for this poem, in this particular instance, I feel that it's as much Robert Duncan's voice and the kind of enchantment that that creates in the room mm-hmm. that the students end up writing out of mm-hmm. than any particular part of the poem that they're going to break off and begin another poem with, which is somehow how it works. Like there's a repeated element or something about that poem that they can borrow and repeat. Mm-hmm. But this poem, it's more about the subject and the mood.
So let's pretend we're in a classroom of third graders and you've just hit the play button and we're going to listen to Robert Duncan reading his poem, Childhood's Retreat.
It's in the perilous branches of the tree, out of blue sky, the wind sings loudest surrounding me, and solitude, a wild solitude, is revealed. Fearfully high I'd climb into the shaking uncertainties of song, part out of longing, part daring myself, part to see that widening of the world, part to find my own, my secret hiding sense and place, where from afar all voices and scenes come back, the barking of a dog, autumnal burnings, far calls, close calls, the boy I was, calls out to me, here, the man where I am. Look, I've been where you most fear to be.
That was Robert Duncan reading Childhood's Retreat. And you can hear he's got an oracular magic in his reading. He puts you in a mood. Mm-hmm. And the third graders respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I have those travel speakers and I hold them up. And usually they're sitting on the carpet. And pretty much right away, their eyes widen and they're wondering what's going on. and they get kind of caught in the texture of that voice.
And what happens next? So we've heard the poem, maybe they've read the poem. What do you do with the poem with third graders? And then we'll talk about what you do with it with college students.
Right. One thing I do is ask for initial impressions. What did you notice? What did you hear? Mm. What stood out to you? Mm-hmm. And then really, it's about not spending too much time on analysis, because you really don't want to give the kids the idea that a poem is a riddle to be solved.
Right.
It's more about an experience. Uh-huh. And you want to catch some of that feeling that's still in the room from the reading. So what I usually do is I'll say, one person, tell me about your secret spot. Tell me about your secret hiding place. Tell me about the place where you go. All hands go up. And you pick a couple people and they start. And then when this kind of energy gathers, like they all want to talk about their secret spot, that's when I say, put it on the page. What is your secret hiding place? Where is it? How do you get there? What are the rules?
Put some questions in there.
Exactly.
Head.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you brought with you some of the poems that were written by, I guess, a third grade class. Mm-hmm. And I want to get you to read one of them just to give us an idea about what the result of this process was. This one is by a girl named Alexis.
My hideout is inside a whale. I first go on my pencil slide. When I get to the whale, it usually picks up its tongue. It waves to me. When he knows I'm sleeping, he turns off the light switch in him. When some aliens come, lasers come from the whale's eyes. When he swallows me, there is a roller coaster in his fluid. When a shark bites his tongue, he slaps them.
Now, that's wonderfully imaginative. She didn't take you literally. She created an imaginative space.
Exactly. And I want to go back to what you said about Kenneth Coke. Mm-hmm. One of the things that he discovered is that because people have these preconceptions that poetry has to be poignant or a profound utterance or something like that, one way to activate students is to tell them, give them permission to be crazy, to be wild, to be imaginative, to be free. And they need that to receive that permission a couple times because it's already ingrained in them that they're supposed to make sense. It's supposed to conform to the teacher's idea.
Well, the marvelous thing in this poem is the roller coaster in his fluid.
I mean, yeah. And you know, if I showed you how fluid is spelled, when I was typing this poem up yesterday, it took me a little while to figure out that that was fluid.
Okay, so that works well. This is a very risky poem, I think, to have read to third graders, and you got good poems out of it from them.
Oh, absolutely.
So you take that same poem and go to a classroom of college students. Tell me about that. First of all, what do you say about this poem before they hear it or before they read it, and how do you work that?
Well, definitely, you know, with the third graders, it's not essential that they have a copy of the poem in front of them. There's something that happens when they do and when they look at it and they see the shape, because they'll take that as permission to play with the placement of the poem on the page. But with college students, it's essential to have the poem on the page. I mean, we are going to analyze the poem together. We're going to notice the moves it makes. We're going to talk about what's the deal with these gaps.
Now, what is the deal with those gaps, by the way? They're wonderful gaps. There's one gap in here that's spectacular.
And solitude, a wild solitude is revealed.
He says, a wild solitude, and ends the line there, and then has an apostrophe S in the next line.
A wild solitude is revealed.
So what do you make of those gaps? What do you tell him about those gaps?
Well, there's a possible conversation about the movement from into free verse, right, and what that means. And students are fascinated with, you know, where do the lines break?
Why do they break when most
exactly,
people?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And there's no easy answer.
No.
It's largely intuitive. So where you can go from there is to ask about the effect. How did you receive that line? When you hear this poem, it really sounds like it's emerging in a sky. The words are, each one is very deliberate. It kind of registers, right, each word. Mm-hmm. It's not a fast poem.
No.
So these line breaks slow the poem down.
Yeah.
And they place emphasis.
Yeah.
Right?
And then what else do you, how do you take a Robert Duncan poem that's a wonderful poem like this and get them to write a poem that they don't feel at all self-conscious about?
That's a really good question. I think there are a couple different ways to answer it. One thing is that in the context of the class that I'm teaching, I have to emphasize over and over, especially with like Poetry One or people who are new to it, that they don't need to adopt some oracular lyrical voice like Robert Duncan. That I'm, from the get-go, I'm usually trying to encourage them to discover the poetic possibilities of their natural voice or their conversational voice or a voice that is closer to their own experience.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I do, another way to answer that question is I bring in the first grade poems.
Oh, really?
Or the third grade poems or whatever it is.
What effect does that have on the class?
This is all theory, but I think that it awakens in them a memory of what that felt like to be that free. And you can see it. I mean, I like to give them the poems in the child's handwriting too, because my sort of theory is that there's almost a body memory. Like you can almost reconnect with what that felt like. And the student's writing and even the look of the poem on the page, it's kind of irresistible. Like it makes them smile.
It also reconnects to the idea that poetry is a form of play. All art is a form of play. You're basically just goofing around. And you may put on a posture of seriousness, and it may be very serious in that moment that you're reading, that Robert Duncan is reading this poem, but it's still a form of play, is it not? And the kids seem to get that intuitively, and adults seem to forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
For me, the way I think about play is what happens in the act of composition, what happens in the act of writing. Because if you are trying to determine the outcome of your piece of writing, and there are too many rules that you're feeling, it hijacks the process. So even if your content is serious, even if you're writing about a death in the family, if you can orient yourself towards the writing of that piece with a sense of possibility, with a sense of openness to whatever comes up, with a willingness to take a swerve that is maybe not totally accessible or legible, but that feels the poem wants to move in that direction, that's the state that I want to be in when I'm writing and that I want to encourage my students to be in.
Hmm. It's interesting to teach writing, but most people are not going to become poets. But tell me about what the effect is of writing poetry is upon the reading of poetry. What is it when you spend time writing a poem, what does it do to your reading of poetry, do you think? Or what do you want it to do to your students?
I think you want it to, by appreciating the complexities of a poem, and I don't mean the complexities that are deliberately and consciously inserted into the poem by the poet. But,
the technical complexities.
But what happens when you look at a poem and you write poetry, you tend to have a deeper appreciation for what's happening there on the page.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a little bit like playing tennis. If you play tennis yourself, you can appreciate the pros.
Right. As Kenneth Koch says in this other book that he writes, he compares it to walking through Soho and looking at the architecture. Right. If you're there with someone who knows about architecture, suddenly you really start to see those buildings. Right. You actually take them in. You stop, you pause, you look up, and you understand what's happening with the steelwork and what's, you know, and you see more. And I think the same is with poetry, that reading and writing it allows you to experience other poems more deeply, more fully, with more pleasure.
Matthew, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can read Matthew Burgess's essay, Serious Play, Odes to the Everyday, on our website in the Learning Lab, where you can find many more articles for teachers and for students. The Learning Lab can be found at poetryfoundation.org/learning. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.